Welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the endarkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power and shine a light ahead of us on the path to where evolution is leading. The purpose of our Wiki Politiki radio show is to bring left and right front and center to face the music and dance together, to address problems rather than just defend positions. We have another purpose as well, and that is to provide a context at a time when content can be contradictory, confusing, and overwhelming. Context, context, context. One of the main reasons we're in the political new word situation we find ourselves in is that the mainstream political conversation seeks to avoid context whenever possible. Take the Democrats, please. While Brett Kavanaugh was rightfully outed as a privileged, self-entitled, frat rat sexual predator, as usual, the Democrats stopped short of seeing the big, big picture. That the abuse of women, abuse of power, abuse of wealth, and abuse of the natural world is all part of the same program, traceable to a papal bull issued in the 1450s known as the Doctrine of Discovery. This document, and by the way, you can hear more in the Wiki interview with Stephen Newcomb and Shauna Bluestar. You can find that on our archives, essentially gave white male Christians the official mandate to dominate, exploit, subjugate, enslave, and kill all non-white non-Christians and take their lands. Hard as it is to believe, this document that is more than 500 years old has been used by our own U.S. Supreme Court to justify breaking treaties with Native peoples. Well, our guest this week, Misa Hopkins, is an advocate for the sacred feminine who understands, thanks to her own Native American roots and connections with indigenous peoples worldwide, she understands not just the exploitation and domination of women and women's wisdom, but the exploitation of an extraction from the natural world. Misa is the author of the best-selling book series Sacred Feminine Awakening. She's spiritual director at sacredfeminineawakening.com. She's the guardian of sacred native path in the feminine. She has had mystical initiations in feminine and masculine energies. She's been given the sacred names Ama, Mother, and Morning Star, Venus. Her life and work is dedicated to facilitating the personal and planetary healing that comes with sacred feminine awareness. Her mission is to help women find their sacred feminine and to facilitate men finding their own spiritual identity, so that instead of the he said, she said yelling matches we're finding on the battlefield, the sacred feminine and sacred masculine can work together as dynamic duo dance partners. Well, she and her partner, Jeff Berger, by the way, were living in Charlottesville, Virginia at the time of the protest riots last year. And she has also, she will share a unique and comprehensive perspective on what really happened and the misunderstandings that led to the death of Heather Heyer, who was protesting the alt-right rally. We have a lot to talk about, so welcome, Misa.
Hey, it's so good to be here, Steve. Thank you for that really beautiful introduction. I was impressed. Who is this woman? I'd like to meet her. She sounds like my kind of woman.
Well, thank you for making that introduction necessary. So. Okay, so let's jump right into the trumped up battle of the sexes. What is your take on the recent Me Too movement and the war that's happening seemingly between men and women?
Oh, what a great question. And unfortunately, and I just have to say it, it just had to happen. You and I were talking earlier about how what we've come to accept as normal really isn't very normal. And I think that it has still been in the closet for, you know, it's just still been in the closet, that we are living in a rape culture. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, just looking at the statistics should make us appalled. You know, one in three women are experiencing sexual violence in our world today. One in three women in the United States, by the way, specifically. And if you're a multiracial woman, it's worse. 50% of the women experience sexual violence. And 8 out of 10 of these rapes that are occurring for women occur at work, at work. And 80% of those cases, the victims knew their abusers. Now, men are also being sexually violated. 1 in 5 men are sexually abused. 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be abused before they turn 18. And that same percentage applies when they get to college. 25% of our young women are forced to have sex during their time in college, and 1/6 of our young men. So when we look at what's really going on, oh, and I want to add one more statistic. Even if you haven't been sexually abused, most of us can at least find some place where we can understand or have seen or experienced sexual harassment. 81% of women are reporting sexual harassment, 43% of men reporting sexual harassment. This is a culture that we're living in that has become abuse and harassment tolerant. We actually treat it as if, gosh, it's really sad. I don't want to hear about it, the fact that it's happening, but we treat it as if it's normal. And it's not. So is it any surprise that when the pot finally boiled over, the lid literally exploded and shattered all over the ceiling? It shouldn't be a big surprise at all. It had to happen because it had to come out of the closet. And I'll talk more later about the burden that women have had to bear over these last, certainly during my lifetime, keeping it in the closet, right? Not disturbing the status quo because your life probably depended on it. We'll talk more about that later. But it had to happen. And it's really not a surprise when we take a look at the statistics.
The statistics are really shocking. And this
they
is worldwide. Shocking. This is worldwide. It's happening in non-Western cultures as well, perhaps more so than here. Is that right?
It is happening everywhere in the world. And genital mutilation, for example, is another form of societally accepted sexual abuse. And so it goes on and on. Incest, you know, huge ratios of incest happening here and in other countries. And I really think that we've been covering our eyes about this. We don't want to see it because it's painful, it's ugly, it's uncomfortable, but it's present. And I think it's that undercurrent. It's the river flowing underneath everything else that we struggle with on the planet today.
You know, that's really a good point. And this sense of denial, this sense of trying to normalize something, the discomfort. Do you think there's a relationship between the Harvey Weinstein? First of all, that was the first big breakthrough that came. Do you think that in some ways is a reaction to or a result of the Trump election and how that went down?
I think it's all interconnected. I think that we've come to this peak moment in our evolution where we're really getting a big mirror image of who we are and what we have accepted. the concept of misogyny, the concept of other, those people aren't good enough, they're bad, they're evil. Over here, we're okay, we're the good guys in the White House, has just really come to the forefront for us to look at. And I think that the march, the Women's March on Washington, D.C., well, around the world, it wasn't just D.C., I think that was a huge statement on the part of women saying, no, this isn't what we vote for. This isn't what we believe in. This isn't who we are. This isn't the kind of government we want to see. This is not the world that we choose to create. We see something better. And this time of positioning, this time of bullying, this time of abusing people, harassing women and laughing it off is done, guys. It's over. And it's time to wake up. Pay attention. We're making a really grand statement. And I think it did catalyze that the courage. I think a lot of things right now are catalyzing women, but certainly looking at what's happening on the political stage and saying, wait a minute, if we don't speak up and if we don't say, listen, we're tired of being abused, it's just going to continue and it's going to perpetuate. So very likely it did play a role in stimulating the Me Too movement. Of course, we wouldn't know without talking to the gals, but I think there's room for some appropriate speculation there.
Well, you know, the other thing is that this is the time where many, many familial and familiar patterns of generations and millennia are coming to the fore to be healed. This is the time of the lifting of the veils and so many family patterns. It's certainly the sexual abuse patterns in the Catholic Church in the past decade have exploded. And so these things are now present for us to be healed. And, you know, for the first time that I can ever remember, probably since the ancient Greek times, there really is a force of masculine versus feminine at this point, that the polarization has never taken on this kind of sex identification and sex role form, I think, particularly because of the statistics that you just mentioned and people's realization that, my God, this is true. It happened to me. So what about your own experiences? How has this movement triggered anything on a personal level?
It has. And I really do think some of this polarization has been going on for a while. It's just been hidden quietly. And that comes from many, many hours of working with women, by the way, and looking at the ways that we tend to passive aggressively try to deal with the emotional content that we're struggling with. It's one of the ways that our own internal aggression comes out sideways. So I think it's been there, and it often has been directed toward men, but couldn't safely be directed toward men. So it came out in other ways, maybe towards our children or towards our friends or our family members. So it's been there. It just hasn't been properly placed and observed, perhaps. Mm-hmm. That might be a way that I would describe it. And yes, it's brought up my own memory. I talk about this with the people that I serve. I was sexually abused as a child, somewhere around the age of 5 or 6. And that memory was repressed for a long, long, long time. And by the way, this is something that isn't really understood by people who have not been sexually abused, that these memories can be repressed for decades. And even if they are remembered, there is an act of that many women do to kind of bury it so that it's not foremost in their consciousness because it's too painful to deal with. So we will often try to push it down or set it aside until our lives unravel in such a way that we can't deny it. And in my case, this led to a really interesting physical phenomena in my body where I was experiencing all kinds of weird symptoms. My body was in pain. My emotions were off the charts. I was that way for years, seeing doctors, and no one seemed to be able to diagnose it. It was one of those, well, it's, we don't know. Get pregnant, Misa. Maybe that'll take care of it. That wasn't my idea of a solution, right? This isn't getting to the root of the problem. And what I finally discovered after 7 years of searching for help is that I was producing as much testosterone as a teenage boy.
Wow.
So, Steve, literally, my female organs were atrophying. That's why I was in so much physical pain. My hormones were off the charts, as you can imagine. So were my emotions, right? My depression was profound. And it was, oh, gosh, I was in my mid-30s before my hormones and my life finally leveled out. And there is a part of me that has always wondered what kind of life I would have led if I hadn't had that kind of emotional, physical struggle from the time I was a little girl.
Isn't that interesting?
Your entire life, yeah.
It shapes who we are. You know, again, a life without conflict is often a life without creation, because, you know, we need the irritating sand to bring out the pearls. And that sounds good in the abstract, and, you know, in the physical reality of it, it can be quite painful and horrific. We're going to take a break very shortly, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about how you've discovered and worked with your own indigenous ancestry and how it relates to your work with the sacred feminine. Steve Behrman, I'll be back with our guest Misa Hopkins after these messages.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras, a new double album of guided meditations to transform your life, a sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com, M-E-T-T-A, mindfulnessmusic.com.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor. Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Thank you. Okay, Steve Behrman, we're on WikiPolitiki. We're back with our guest, Misa Hopkins. Misa, how about some background on how you developed your own work of heart, particularly as it relates to indigenous wisdom and the sacred feminine?
No, Steve, I was so blessed at an early age, really in my 30s. I was fortunate enough to decide that I needed to follow my bloodline a little bit. My mother had a small amount of Cherokee blood. Therefore, you know, I was the beneficiary of her gift. And after she crossed over, I decided that I owed it to myself to explore what her native blood brought to my life. And I'd had some really interesting healing experiences with sound, basically with my mother. And I sang a song to her, and she left her deathbed, which was pretty shocking. It was a tremendous experience for me and catapulted my life into a whole new direction, out of organizational development work and corporate work into a 10-year walkabout, basically, here in this country and in other countries, connecting with indigenous elders and with mystical teachers to understand this phenomena of sound and how it can heal. And it led me ultimately to a couple of beautiful Cherokee medicine women who spent years with me, helping me understand my gifts, cultivate my spiritual gifts, connect to the dream time, connect to visions. I didn't even know what a vision was until I spent time with them, and putting that into perspective in my relationship with the earth, that I wasn't separate from her, I wasn't living on her, I was living with her. It was with, really, through Native teachings that I was introduced to the concept that the abuse of women is equivalent, and it is the same energy that abuses the earth. And it lives in all of us. This isn't just a men and women thing. When we disconnect from love, when we disconnect from the gifts of life itself, we are disconnecting from source. And when we disconnect, we try to get there sometimes by having power over, by dominating, right? It's one of the avenues we can choose to attempt to reconnect. But it fails us because we are of the earth and the earth is of us. And when we reconnect, that's when we often find our peace, our inner peace again, our sense of belonging that so many of us long for. We find ourselves recognizing our own self-significance in relationship to all living things. So they help pull me really out of the ashes and help me find my center again, and bless them all. And these were teachers from various backgrounds, not just indigenous teachers, but they took me into the heart of what the sacred feminine was so that I could find myself again. And very much into the essence of what the Chinese would call yin energy. I think they describe it most beautifully, which is that silent womb that we come from, that the earth comes from, that all creation comes from. And when we return to that womb, we are able to hold ourselves in infinite compassionate love, because that is how we are being held. And we are able to emerge reborn, reawakened in the light of who we are, in the loving expression of who we are, or as I was taught, the sacred masculine or yang expression of who we are. And it's that journey that you might say saved me. I don't know if you were aware, Steve, most cases of abuse are perpetuated by individuals who have been abused.
Sure, absolutely. That's been the statistic. That's been the understanding. People tend to repeat the behavior so that they find they're looking for a way to understand it and resolve it, and often that's the way they do that. I really like your representation of yin and yang, that essentially it's in all of us. We each have a yin side And then we turn ourselves inside out, and we have a young side. And so there's a relationship between what we, with the connection that we have in this silent womb to the all that is, to the unknown, to that invisible, that ineffable, and then our expressions in the world, which are the young expressions. So I think this is really a very, very important important distinction, that we have this in ourselves. And in a society where there really isn't any kind of initiation, in contrast to indigenous societies where there is definitely an initiation, the term that's been used to describe most of us are hungry ghosts, that rather than being internally and intrinsically connected with this, with the source, we're looking for our well-being outside of the source, which turns us into takers rather than givers. Does that resonate with what you've learned?
It does, and I would add another layer to that, Steve. I think you've spoken to it very, very well. The other layer to that is that if you have been abused as a child, sexually, verbally, physically abused, then your perspective is the threat is from outside you. Because it was from outside you. And therefore, if you grow up and you never quite are ready or introduced to a deeper spiritual perspective of the inward journey into the self, then you will continue to look for who is perpetrating this against you all of your life. Who is to blame? Who is responsible? There must be a perpetrator, right? And it's not me, I'm the victim. So now we've immediately created a polarization in our own lives that is looking for the enemy. And we do that both as men and as women. We will look for the enemy. And that's what gets us into trouble, because if we were to go inward, what we quickly realize is that we all are the victims and the abusers. We are all part of this drama that we are co-creating in this life or another life. At some point, we set something up. We set something into motion. And we are the ones who can recreate our experience. And where do we go? And this was the blessing, the teaching that was brought to me. We go to the womb. You go into the womb of creation, because that is where we begin again. Begin again in the silence. And we do this in all kinds of spiritual traditions around the world, right? Whether it's contemplative prayer, or you're going into sweat lodge, or as I teach my women to go, or and men to go into a deep holding meditation, almost trance-like state, where you go very deep into silence, or you're going into form of silent meditation. Traditions all around the world are teaching us how to do this, right? Go back into the silence, because there you will see yourself differently and you will emerge in that loving light that you are. And when you emerge in that loving light, you want everybody to be as happy and as blissful as you are. You can't imagine perpetrating against someone else, right? It's unthinkable.
You know, there's a wonderful quote that I heard years ago from Jean Shinoda Bolen, who said that people seek love, and when they can't find love, they settle for power. And, you know, that sounds like this ongoing pattern of abuse that's being busted now. Question here. I know this is going to sound very glib and maybe silly. What do women want? Specifically, what priorities do women want our country and our government to address, in your opinion?
In my opinion, and what I hear as I'm working with my clients, is they really want to be seen and heard and respected. There's another statistic we didn't talk about earlier, and that is that false reporting of abuse, sexual abuse cases, tends to be very low. It's not high. It's actually very low. That's our big suspicion, right? Oh, they're just making this up to get back at somebody. That's actually very low. And women are saying it pretty clearly. They want to be heard. They want to be seen. They want some compassion for the suffering that they've experienced, and they want respect. And again, I think the Women's March on Washington, D.C., they said it so beautifully. They didn't just want that respect for them as women. They wanted that respect for all people of all colors, of all nationalities, of all ages, respect. That, and I think there's a clear statement that sexual abuse and harassment are not just what ambitious men do and we just have to deal with it. That's what women have been telling ourselves for a long, long time. We just have to deal with it because nobody's going to believe me. If I report it, I'm going to get blamed. If I report it, it's only going to get worse. And keep in mind that when a woman is abused, she's often told she's the reason that the abuse is happening, right? You're the reason.
Mm-hmm. You asked for it.
Yep, you asked for it. That's right. Or you're so pretty or you're so beautiful. It's, you know, whatever it is. But it's your fault. So, and just the tremendous shame that comes with thinking that it's your fault. So women are saying now, no, it's not our fault. And there's some accountability that needs to happen here. And we need to have a different set of priorities that is based in compassion, that is based in fairness and justice for all people. It takes all people into account. Why? Because the price has been too high. And what I would add to that is that our willingness to tolerate abuse is leading to the kinds of physical, emotional, societal, and political problems that we're seeing today. Without that abuse, and that abuse sets up the structure that you just talked about, right? If I can't experience love, then I'll go for power. Why? Because power gives me a sense of control over, and therefore I feel safer. But it's not a real, deep, and true safety. It's momentary, it's fleeting, and you have to keep gathering power over others in order to feel that momentary sense of safety. It's like an addiction. It's not true. It's not deep. But when we allow ourselves to heal that pattern by going in and finding the one inside of us that has been abused and finding the one inside of us that has abused in some form or another, even if it's verbally mm-hmm. abused someone else, and find that forgiveness and that peace, oh, my goodness, whole new playing field. Whole new world of possibility opens up for us. We attract totally different kinds of relationships, and we expect different kinds of relationships and treatment of each other.
Yeah, we no longer need to play out the other pattern because we've unwrapped and unraveled a pattern. We found ourselves in there, and there's no need to create the play anymore. Let's talk about men. How are men's and women's processes different? And, you know, how do you what's your take on the reactions and responses of men in this particular time? I mean, first of all, you know, there's the Kavanaugh response and so on. And then there's the response of people like Al Franken, et cetera, et cetera. What can men do and where can men expand and grow through this particular time?
That's a great question. All right. I want to share an example of something that really exemplified for me the difference between the way men and women tend to approach things. I was talking with a friend of mine who organized a men's retreat, and he was sharing with me how the men gathered together to create their retreat, which was very simple. They got together and they decided what the major needs were, right? Transportation, food, activities, cleanup, all of those things, right? And then they decided who was responsible or in charge of each one of those areas of interest. Kind of sounds like our cabinet, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
To take care of every area that we would
Secretary of Transportation, about. Secretary of Food, and all of that.
Exactly. Exactly. And I said, well, how interesting. And he said, it was a wonderful retreat. And I said, no doubt. Everybody knew their role, right? So the question that they answered together was, who's in charge or who is responsible?
Ah, very good question.
They follow with the dictates of what has been assigned by who is responsible. Now, women did this very differently. At the retreat I had just been to and helped coordinate, this is how the women did it. Okay, this is the date. We all voted on the location and the date. All right, this is the time we'll roughly get together. And everybody bring food and whatever you want to bring, and let's get together. And so the women's process was to go home and say, what now? What food do I want to bring to this? And, who should I call and offer a ride to? And I think I want a drum. Oh, you know what? I'll just bring a whole bunch of drums in case the women want a drum. I'll send an email and tell them to bring their own. And another woman would say, I've got art supplies. I think I'll bring them because, oh, who knows? We might want to make our own medicine wheels, you know? So we all got together and we talked about what we brought and who would want to do what and what time we'd do it. And that was our retreat. And it was fabulous. We had a wonderful time. So the women's question was, what is needed? What is needed? The women approached it intuitively. The men approached it with structure. So the contrast was, who is responsible compared to what is needed? And as I look at how we create our movement as societies, right, as groups of people, even as individuals, both of those questions are important. Not one or the other, but both. Who is responsible in this moment, right now? And what is needed? What is needed? This is what women are asking. This is what women are talking about. What is needed? And I think if there's anything that we can do together as women and men, and I would say growing together as men and women, is to understand that our approaches are a little bit different. But they both contribute to the whole of who we are. We need that intuitive approach. We also need that structured approach.
You know, it's interesting. There is a relationship between the what is needed question and nurturance, which is the feminine quality. We'll be back for a final segment with Misa Hopkins after this message.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Barry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network. Presenting transformative programs and events to help you waken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to Om Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine, Paul Avgerinos, A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Well, hello, this is Steve Behrman. I'm back with our guest on WikiPolitiki, Misa Hopkins. Hard to believe we're just down to the last segment, so I want to just jump in with how this applies to the sacred masculine. And we're noticing that as women are waking up to their own spiritual and personal psychological identities, how is that impacting their relationship with men, and what's the way forward?
I love that question. What I see happening, Steve, is that, and I mentioned earlier that I would speak to this, that women are not willing to shoulder the blame in silence anymore. They're not willing to accept that that they are the cause of the problems that have been, you know, of the sexual abuse or the abuse that they've experienced. And they're more inclined to speak up about what we're seeing and what we find acceptable. And that speaking out is an expression of sacred masculine energy, right? Mm-hmm. Expression is the masculine. And the men, and this is what I hear women wanting from their partners, their beloveds, is this. And men that care, not just our beloveds, but to listen with compassion and respect for the truth she is trying to finally articulate after years of bottled up pain or suppressing her intuitive wisdom. And that capacity to listen and hold space for someone you care about is sacred feminine energy. So the biggest gift that a man can offer is to really, really listen with a full and open heart to what she is saying. When it comes to Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford, I really think a great disservice was done to the women of this country. We deserved for a thorough investigation by the FBI, not the half-hearted investigation that took place, because those past wounds of abuse aren't healed until you get in there and you do the emotional work. It doesn't go away just because you got older. If indeed sexual abuse had been perpetrated on Christine Blasey Ford, and it probably, she was pretty clear about it. It takes years of personal work and the right motivation for a woman to finally speak out. It's not just a part of the past. It is a part of your present until you do that deep emotional spiritual work. And that's each of our own responsibility. Remember, we were looking at the question, who's responsible? Every single one of us. You know, what's needed? The willingness to listen with an open heart to even the most painful information that is presented to us, and to make sure that we hold ourselves accountable and that we open up to the compassion at the same time that understands we have all been playing out this drama of abuse. And it's time. It's time for that to end. That, I think, is where our identities are taking us, is to a much deeper understanding of our own sacred masculine and our own sacred feminine energies and how they're playing out in the world today and what we can do to make it easier for both sexes.
You know, that's such an obvious it's an obvious thing that each of us has our own masculine and feminine. And I prefer the yin and yang because they're more neutral. Or as the Swami says, it's not about boys and girls. It's much more about these parts of ourselves, which if we're in healthy balance, we're able to tune in and connect with our quiet, intuitive side, a nonlinear part, and then be able to act in structures in the world in a way that that is helpful and useful. So what you're saying is that essentially the way that this gets healed is for each of us to come to recognize the yin or feminine and yang, or masculine parts of our own identity. We may be strong in some and not the other. I mean, there's certainly men who are strong in these feminine qualities that have been repressed, and same with women. And I think that there's been a lot more done with women to help them cultivate their both sides than it's been done with men. I watched this special that Michelle Obama did with Beyonce a couple of years ago, and I noticed it started to make me very uncomfortable, because it was only about girls, only about girls, only about girls, and there was really nothing in there to help boys and men allow their two parts to come forward appropriately. So how does this get integrated on a societal level?
I think it's a really good question, and I do think you're right. I think we need to help our young men and our young women. I work primarily with adults, but I worked in education for years with children to be able to see that place within themselves, right? We're doing things now, for example, very creatively, where we're introducing meditation in the schools, contemplation in the schools, quiet time, recognizing that, for example, what they're discovering is that the children are less inclined to bully when they're in a more peaceful mindset. And they're encouraged to meditate rather than the kind of punishing that we've done in the past. So that sense of going inward and getting still and reconnecting, whatever they call that reconnection, right? Just that with tranquility and with their inner peace is making a difference for them in their lives. I think that's a powerful tool to introduce both to boys and girls. And it allows them to, just like an adult, to get into that deeper truth so that they can communicate a little more effectively about what's really going on for them and to speak to their emotions effectively so that we can address the deeper currents of what's going on. I think there are some really creative things happening out there, and I want to see more of that happening in education and happening with our children, and providing the same opportunities for men and women so that we can approach each other gracefully and beautifully as we mature and heal these wounds once and for all. You're right, it's just as traumatic for a little boy. It's just as traumatic for a man as it is for a woman. And we need to remember. We need to remember with compassion our men and our boys too.
Wow, this is really very, very helpful, because it's an understanding what you talked about, the meditation in school, that kind of time out rather than, you know, corporal punishment, which has been the old dominator way of dealing with it. There was a study done at Yale, an article came out last year, that when there's more fear, when there's more domination, people tend to be more conservative. When there's more openness, when there's more spaciousness, when there's more safety, people tend to become more progressive. So these aren't necessarily hardwired tendencies that we have. They're cultural stances that get cultivated, and you can see why boys tend to tend to create gangs to create safety. They're afraid that they'll be seen as weak and so on. And it's probably why the associate bullies go along with the bullies, because they are afraid of being bullied and made fun of themselves. We really have just really about 7 or 8 minutes left. I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about your experiences during the Charlottesville demonstrations and riots a year ago. You were right there in town. You and your partner, Jeff Berger, were there. What was it like? What kinds of distortions and misunderstandings did the media have that had an impact on that?
Well, you know, there was so much going on in Charlottesville that I think it would have been difficult for the media to have accurately covered everything. In fact, a lot of what was going on didn't come out until afterwards when the media was gone. And I can tell you, living there, we all would be too big a word, but there was this pervasive sense of being invaded, being used, because people were coming from all over the country who didn't live in Charlottesville to protest at, you know, the statue of General Lee, basically not wanting it to come down because the government, our local government or city council was talking about removing that statue because of the kind of implications that came with it, right? These statues were erected during the Jim Crow era at a time when there was a very strong message to our African-American community that you're not yet out from under the boot of white supremacy yet. Just know your place, basically. It was a know your place kind of statement. So we have good reasons to want to remove it because Charlottesville was a very open, very liberal community, very accepting and tolerant of each other. We certainly had our issues, but we were working to heal the wounds of racism, not exacerbate them. So it really did feel like an abuse, like an invasion. One of the pieces that wasn't coming out in the media that I think was really significant is that there were three groups of militia from Pennsylvania, New York, and Maryland, I believe, who came down for the big rally, the one on Saturday where everybody knows about, where Heather Heyer was killed by the man who was, you know, driving the vehicle and crashed into the crowd. There were militia people who came down from these three states to act as peacekeepers. And they were dressed in camos. They were carrying semi-automatic weapons. Many of the counter-protesters thought that they were with the alt-right or Unite the Right protesters. And as it turns out, that wasn't the case. They were actually coming to do the peacekeeping that, as it turned out, the city police and the state police did not do. They did not protect the protesters in any way to get to Emancipation Park safely. There were about 50 protesters, by the way, so individuals, Unite the Right people from all over the country who had gathered together, 50 of them. But there were thousands of people from Charlottesville, ministers that were there praying, citizens who were there, Antifa counter-protesters were there. I mean, this was a huge mass of people trying to keep them from getting to Emancipation Park, where the statue of Robert E. Lee was still standing. So there was no protection from our police until there was enough violence for them to call it an illegal assembly. And that took place at the point that Heather Heyer was killed and 19 people were injured, some of them seriously injured, I mean, in the hospital for weeks. So it was a deeply, deeply disturbing time for everyone. There was a lot going on and a lot of misunderstanding that was taking place in terms of who these people with the assault rifles really were.
You know, it's funny, when I was at the Transpartisan Citizens Convention in 2009 in Denver, for some strange reason, the people I had the closest heart connection with were the militia people that you're talking about. They were armed, but they had a deeper purpose, and it was very easy to misinterpret their intention. Especially when you see guns, we have two sides that have been polarized around that issue. So, what did you find out about yourself during the protests and riots?
I think I discovered how deep my compassion really could go. From much of the spiritual community that I knew in Charlottesville, we were doing a really great job of being compassionate for Heather, her family, the people who were injured, you know, all of the individuals who suffered as a result of that. My gosh, our Jewish brothers and sisters who were at synagogue with armed men outside their front door, not understanding who they were and why they were there.
Wow.
I mean, just, oh my gosh. Yeah, a lot of people, the state troopers who died in the helicopter. We never found out why that copter went down. There was a lot going on, and we could hold compassion for many, many people. And the individuals it was hardest to hold compassion for were the alt-right people that had come into our town, our city, with their slogans, with their, you know, blood and soil, Nazi. That's an old Nazi slogan, saying they were claiming their city for ourselves. Some of them were. That's why it was part of that invasion that we felt. It was difficult. It was difficult to have compassion for James Fields, who was the young man who smashed his car into the group of counter-protesters. Really difficult. But we did our best to get there. I was one of the individuals who held talking circle and prayer circle, so that we could give ourselves that opportunity to find our compassion for the perpetrators as well, because they, quote, perpetrators, from our standpoint, they also were individuals carrying their wounds and their burdens, right? We talked about that we look then for power over when we ourselves have been abused. We look for some way to do that.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Misa Hopkins. Misa can be found online at sacredfeminineawakening.com. We'll also have that on our Wiki Politiki archives page. Thank you so much, Misa Hopkins, for offering deep, deep wisdom on the sacred feminine, sacred masculine. This is Steve Behrman with Wiki Politiki. We'll catch you again next week.